I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We're back, Arts and Seizures, here in Bushwick, live from Roberta's, and it is about 10 million degrees outside, and Jamie Attenberg, I can't believe you managed to muddle through this muck to get here. Thank you so much for coming out.
I'm very excited to be here.
I took the L train and the G train here, and I gotta say, I was very impressed by the L train air conditioning today. I mean, usually I think the 6 train air conditioning is like the best in the city,
Yeah. And
what I usually think is that the quality of air conditioning on the MTA is directly proportional to the affluence of the people whose neighborhoods that line of the train serves.
You sound like a man who takes the train a lot.
Enough. The 6 train is like a movie theater or like a supermarket. And the L train historically hasn't been that good, but it's gotten a lot better, and you've lived in Williamsburg a long time.
Have
you noticed the air conditioning on the L train getting better as Williamsburg becomes more posh?
I don't take the train. The problem is I don't take the train that much. I bike a lot. But I did buy an air conditioner this morning in Queens.
Goodness.
Yeah, I went out to the Home Depot and I bought one. I went out and I bought one. And I want to make love to my air conditioner. Like, I really love it a lot. Like, I plugged it
They're
in.
They're awesome.
They're really awesome. And I got one that was, like, an easy one that you just... It's, like, not in the window. It's, like, one of those portable ones, and you just put the little... whatever thing.
Now that works okay?
Yeah. Oh, it was...
Like looks like R2-D2?
Yeah, yeah. But it's so... It's really great, and it's really easy, and I didn't have to, like, hoist it up into the window, and I'm really... Yeah, I'm in love with it.
And you spend a lot of time in New Orleans, too, which is, like, a swampy... Well, it's like today, it feels like Louisiana here in New York City.
It's true, but I do not go there in the summer. The first summer that I ever went there, I was there for, like, a month, and I crashed on the couch of this band called Galactic. Have you ever heard of them?
Galactic? Yeah. Are you kidding? You're in with, like the premier, like, jam
band
of all time?
But they were, like... It was 20 years ago.
Are you a deadhead,
really
too?
What? No. And I didn't know who even... I just knew one of them. And that was it. And I slept on their couch. But I was down there for like a month, and it was the hottest I've ever. And it just smells like.
Of course, a galactic
it
month. It's probably
crotchy.
Like a New Yorker's like afternoon.
Well, yeah, it was super crotchy down there. But so I wouldn't go back there. But I would like to live there more. I live there 3 months a year, and I think I would like to live there 6 months a year. Do you talk about the date thing?
The awkward date table? Are you kidding?
They are not talking, and I'm worried about them. And they're very cute.
No,
they're
long-time
so
listeners of the show. Oh, she's looking into space. I'll take the over-under and when the phones come out. It's about 3 minutes before they're
but
both
maybe they're, like, long-term. Maybe it's not a new...
Yeah.
But they're so cute, and I think that they should... But they're making eye contact.
Well, maybe they'll come around. They're not communicating. So, hey, listen, for everybody out in Radio Land who's coming in naked and doesn't know who Jamie is, I want to do my old-timey voice, okay, just because your reviews are so amazing. I want to do my Walter Winchell voice, which I have not rehearsed. But your new book is Saint Maisie. I mean, you're an amazing writer and author, and your book is getting amazing accolades from every corner. Cue the teletype machine, Liz.
Wow.
Kansas City star. An attentive character study that also happens to be rich in lore and fiery detail, St. Maisie is an edifying, companionable, and moving novel. The Boston Globe says St. Maisie is a boisterous, deep, provocative book. St. Maisie is in the Wall Street Journal. It looks deep into the spirit of generosity as a fresh, witty, and historical novel. And on and on. Wait, let's see. The New York Times says St. Maisie is full of love and drink and dirty sex, nobility, and beef stew. NPR says, Maisie's story unfolds with simplicity and grace. Did I say that already?
That's good.
Okay, kill the teletype.
That was amazing.
But it's like in a land where people aren't even getting their books reviewed, you've managed to get every possible. You're in Travel and Leisure this month.
Is that true?
Some interview with Travel. Is that the right
I did not even know that. Maybe.
Not to mention Grub Street.
Yeah, oh, well, that
I missed the LA Times.
The Grub Street.
Winning novel, lovely tribute to a New Yorker.
The Grub Street thing, though, was my favorite thing ever. I had been dreaming about writing that food diary for Grub Street for a really long time. and I met people who were like, could help me to do it, but they were like, they casually mentioned it, like, oh, maybe you'd want to do this. And I was like, that's all I want to do because I read it every week and it's like one of my favorite things on the internet ever, ever, ever.
And there you were stumbling around to the book expo eating.
Yes. Eating whatever
fair
crap,
food.
Yeah, fair food at PEA. Yeah, well, it was at the Hudson, but it still wasn't that good. But yeah, that was I've been writing a lot about consuming things. I have a piece that's going online tomorrow for Saveur. That's all about what I ate on book tour.
See what I'm saying?
My three. I wrote about drinking for the Wall Street whiskey for the Wall Street Journal, and I wrote about everything I ate for Grub Street, and then I wrote everything I ate for Saveur, and I was like, that is it. I'm done. No one needs to know what I eat anymore.
Well, we're getting the pizza order is in.
Yeah.
This isn't NPR.
I'm going to eat the shit out of that pizza.
Yeah. NPR, no pizza radio. Okay. They ever give you pizza on NPR? I don't think so.
NPR has never given me anything.
So you're enjoying all this publicity, Saint Maisie, your new book. I mean, again, it's really everywhere, and in a world where writers and books just don't get the attention of Kardashians and.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, it's so small. It's such a small scale. It's like the tiniest. It's a tiny piece of a tiny pie, and there's not even any pie really for the book people. Like we're really small. But it's wonderful. I mean, I say this not insincerely. The greatest thing about it is that when I wrote the book, it was because it's based on this real person, and I wanted people to know about her. And so the fun part is seeing all these reviews where they write about who the real person was first. Like always, the first paragraph or two. Covers
well,
this amazing woman.
Okay.
Yeah,
give us.
Well, she was she,
the executive summary.
The executive summary is that she, Maisie Phillips, was a woman who ran a movie theater on the Bowery in the 1920s through the 1940s, a little bit longer than that, but just that's the period covered
through Prohibition
in the
and through the end of Depression.
Yes, exactly. Great, rich time period to cover, and she was known as the Queen of the Bowery. She was the hub of the neighborhood. She was kind of this boozy broad. And she was also known for helping all the homeless men in the neighborhood. And she was, in my eyes, like a really fantastic, a complicated, deep, funny, body, saint-like figure. And I wanted to write about her because I didn't want people to forget about her. And now when she gets, the book gets reviewed, they talk about her. And so.
And it's more than a book. It's a bar.
Well, yeah. And
it's a book and a bar.
It's a wonderful, have you been to St. Mary's?
I haven't, but believe me, it's on my short list because
yeah.
A book that extends from a bar in both directions. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would like. Yeah. Like, I get to make things around things I find interesting.
So, are you St. Maisie? Do you relate to her? I mean, are you like living in her skin while you're writing from this point of view?
I mean, when I'm in it, I'm trying to understand how to be her because she's an amazing person and I really wanted to learn how to be that kind of person. But I'm not really, I'm like an okay person. Like, we're all kind of okay people. There's very few people that are like great.
Do you believe that people are basically good? Because I'm getting that from, I'm about halfway through the book. And there's definitely a vibe that people's, I'm feeling from your point of view and from the Maisie point of view, and it should be mentioned that the book is Maisie's diary with other interviews and other people, speaking in a Greek chorus of all her friends and contemporaries.
Yeah.
But when you're writing, I mean, you're writing from Maisie's point of view, and I'm feeling genuine goodness.
I think so. I believe that. I mean, and I say that as a person who lives in New York City, and I feel like people are all, New York gets a bad rap as like being full of not good people, but actually there's really amazing
people
here.
Actually, it's the most polite place in the world because if we weren't polite, we'd kill each other.
Right, right.
It's a big please and thank you town. It has to be.
It totally is. And also, like, everyone always gives directions. Like, I feel I do this, and like other people do this too. Where I mean, I constantly get asked for directions like 5 times a week. I'm not even exaggerating because I live in Williamsburg, and there's like every European tourist looks at me and goes, "She's safe. We'll ask her." Or subways where whenever you ask someone where the subway is, they always say, "Where do you want to go?" Right? Instead of just like pointing you to a subway, they're like, "Well, maybe there's three subways that like let me help you get to the right."
New Yorkers are very thoughtful that
they're
way.
They're so thoughtful and nice and, like, think about, like, ease and convenience and all that kind of stuff. So I do think that people, most people I meet, and also I travel around America a lot, and most people I meet are really good. So, oh, they're talking.
Oh, that's
I think,
good.
Sorry. the people, sorry.
Update
to change
on the awkward date table. No.
They're chatting. Okay.
No. I think he's in the doghouse, but she wants him out.
Yeah.
Okay.
She wants to
like, she
him.
Put him there, but she wants to take him out and is just wondering what the exit strategy is.
He's very handsome and she's very cute.
I predict makeup sex as soon as this brunch is over.
Anyway, yeah. So I do think people are good. I have hope for humanity. And even though sometimes it feels a little dark, the more time I spend on Twitter, the less I feel that way sometimes.
I love your Twitter account. I've been following you, and I have to say, I love the tweet that just said, "I am so happy I am a Jew." Me too.
Are you?
I love being a Jew. I'm not the self-loathing Jew. I mean, I suppose I have my moments.
Yeah.
But usually it has nothing to do with my Jewishness.
Well, it's weird because Jewishness, being a Jew is an inherently self-loathing act, but existence. But also, like, then you have to learn to love that inherent self-loathing.
What do you love about being a Jew, Jamie?
I mean, sometimes I don't like having the Jew hair, but I do like the other night I was thinking about how much I really loved it because it was like perfectly just, it was like 10 inches wide or whatever. And it was really, measured it and it was perfectly wide.
can you give our listeners maybe a few tips to avoid Jufro?
No, I don't have any. I wish somebody would give me some. If you guys have any, send me some.
But I knew these guys, one of these guys in my band who had frizzy, Jewy hair, and we were like out and tour in France where that kind of thing isn't really...
Did you used to have?
I have no hair now, but even when I did have, even when I still had my looks, I had pretty straight hair. I was like a Brett girl when I was like 13. I look good. And then it was like everything, and then like girl. And then like nothing. But he used to like wear hats right out of the shower. That was like his thing.
Yeah.
That was like his thing. So wow. By the time he got on stage, he didn't look too Jewy.
You say he wore it so that he could just flatten his
flatten it out.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
It was like an out of the shower kind of Jufro pro.
Not in this weather.
Not a Jufro. I was gonna say program, but I guess I mean pogrom.
Yeah. So I also had like, you know, because for my last book which was like a really Jewish book. I will say that when I was writing it, I did not even think of it as a Jewish book. I was like, oh, it's just family and they're Jewish and whatever. But that's the same when I was writing Maisie. I was like, oh, it's. Happens to take place in New York, and then I got to the end. Everyone's like, "This is a love letter." Like every review says, it's a love letter to New York, and I was like, "Oh, I guess it is."
It is a yeah. New York book, and yeah. It's also obviously about a strong female character. Do you think you need a woman? You need a woman has to write a book like this. Do you think a man could have written a book like this?
Oh, I think so. That's a really interesting question. I hope so. Like, I hope I could write a book about a man. I mean, there's plenty of male voices in the book. Mm-hmm. I hope I could write a book about a man and have it be a really strong male character. I mean, I feel like we should be able to write about anything. Like, we're, like, old people, young people, people of color. Like, I think everything should be available to... You know, or if you're a person of color, you should be able to write about white people. Like, I think it's all.
Do you think straight guys can play gay guys in movies and TV, or is that, or should we be moving past that?
No, yeah, I think
can straight hetero guys play trans?
Let's let everyone have their fair chance at whatever is out there. But I think that
it's a point of view question.
Yeah, yeah. I think the best person should get for the part should get the part. I would say that and that understanding and that of that experience. But
no affirmative action.
No affirmative action. No, but I think that everything should be accessible to everyone, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, people should have the chance to write whatever they want. But also, I think that you should ask for help. Like, if you don't... Like, for me to write a book about a person of another race than myself, I would never just write it and then just, like, put it out there. Like, I would definitely ask for people to read it and consult on it, and I would do a shit ton of research. Like, for me, I wrote about a woman in the 1920s. Well, I've never lived in the 1920s, so I did a shit
that
ton
you know
of... Yeah, so I did a shit ton of research, and I also, like, would have male readers for my book, things like that. So I think that you just have to know how to ask for help.
So here's an easier question, and then we're going to take a little break, and I think we've got some music actually from maybe a song that even Maisie might have liked herself. kind of dug. Oh. But before we go to the break, do you consider yourself a Brooklyn writer? And is that a voice? Because I hear that. I just moved to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I asked one of our friends, Jason Diamond. I moved from this city. Now I call it the city because I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
But I lived in Manhattan my whole life, and I always said, sure, I'm a New York writer, but basically I'm just an unqualified writer. My kitchen table where I write happens to be in Manhattan. Now it happens to be in Brooklyn. Yeah. Have I suddenly become a Brooklyn writer? Have I joined this club, which definitely, some people are pretty precious about it. They wear it on their sleeves.
Oh, I think I'm an American writer. I'm from the Midwest.
Yeah.
Midwest is best.
All right, tell you what, we're going to take a quick break, and we got some a song from, I think Prohibition era, 1920, the same year that everybody stopped drinking and women got the right to vote. No cause and effect there. You can draw your own conclusions. You're listening to Arts and Seizures, streaming live from Bushwick at Roberta's on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Mike Edison with Jamie Attenberg. See you in 2 seconds.
Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Oh, holy cow. I'm caught with the pizza rosso in my mouth. We're back on Arts and Seizures. It's Mike Edison with the fabulous Jamie Attenberg celebrating her new book, St. Maisie. And your new air conditioner.
Oh, my God. I love it. It's over. I'm going home, and I'm not leaving the apartment for 2 days because I'm in love.
is that what it takes?
Yeah, pretty much.
So you have, with your new book, like I said before, the reach is unbelievable. Now you're going to Europe. You're touring. I mean, this is like a really substantial book tour. I mean,
it's true. Well,
it's like a rock and roll tour.
I'm going to do, I think it's like 6 weeks total. 6 weeks total this fall.
6 weeks?
Yeah, I'm going to do, but it's not, I'll do university. I'm going to do some Midwestern university time. I'm going to do a week in England. I'm going to do, but in a little, in the middle of it, I'm just going kind of all over the place. But in the middle of it, I get 5 days in Mexico City, where I've never been before.
Oh, Mexico City, DFA.
Yeah, I'm really.
¿Hablas español?
No, but I have friends that are going to be there, and I'm really excited. And I'll tell you a weird little Twitter thing. Hopefully, it will work out. So I tweeted I was going to Mexico City, and I was like, oh, I want to do a reading in Mexico City, which is tricky because my book did not come out in Spanish. But I still think that I felt like I could do, like, that there's enough of an expat community that maybe I could do something there. So anyway, the American ambassador to Jamaica follows me on Twitter, and he tweeted at me that he could help me get a reading in Mexico City.
Yeah, man.
And so he he hooked me up with, I think, the cultural attaché to Mexico City, and I think I'm going to end up doing
a reading
on the American embassy in Mexico City, something like that. I don't know.
I so need a cultural attaché. I'm going shopping for a cultural attaché.
But I think I just want to, do readings at American embassies all over the world. Like,
I think an embassy
tour
is fantastic.
They have no money.
Get to the roof now. The helicopter is coming. Just wait till when someone says the tour is over.
I don't think they have any money to actually get you there, but I think when they get you there, they can feed you and you'll have a really good time.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get the best taco you've ever had in your life.
Yeah. And the buildings will be really cool.
Mexico City is fabulous, and there's a real culture there of art. There's a real culture of cinema and painting and literature.
Yeah.
It's a very lively, very, very vibrant young city. Mexico City kind of kicks ass.
So that's like my most exciting.
It might be your new place. I'm seeing.
I know. I feel a little. I feel that I'm going to fall in love with it. It is a really. It's a really big city, which might be too big for me. Like, because I love New Orleans because it's a very manageable.
New Orleans is tiny.
Yeah.
So how do you find yourself in New Orleans, NOLA?
Well, besides obviously sleeping on that couch 20 years ago. I tried to live everywhere in America. I mean, I always had New York as the home base for the last. I moved here in 1998, so I've tried L.A. and Seattle and Portland, Oregon, and I'm from Chicago, but I spent a little time, more time as an adult in Chicago, and all different kinds of places. And the only places I hadn't really spent time were Austin and New Orleans in a significant way as an adult, like meaning in my late 30s as an adult. And so I was kind of, it was a little bit of a coin toss. And then I just posted something on, the internet and said, anyone know of a place in either one of these places, towns, and New Orleans popped up.
Well, I think you made the right choice. I mean, I'm sure I'll be like, my Twitter account's going to light up with death threats from everybody in Texas. But I think New Orleans got a lot more soul than Austin. I mean, at this late date, I mean, to me, Austin just is not a happening place. I think I know some great people in Austin. I've had amazing times in Austin. But I think I couldn't live there. I just don't think I'd meet the kind of people I'd want to hang out and talk to. And New Orleans has this vibe, especially for a writer. And we can talk about what it means to be a writer in the writer's life. It's sort of, people are very calm. And for all the right reasons.
It's quiet. I think it's a really quiet city in a way. I mean, you can find the noise if you want it, but also like it's.
They make noise in New Orleans, and never has there been a town more in love with its own drinking problem.
Yeah. But you can also, I can hear. A marching band from a mile away. Let's just put it that way. Like, I could never hear that here.
New Orleans, fantasy. So you spend a couple months a year and you sort of...
I spend 3 months.
Find a place each year in a different neighborhood?
Yeah, I would like that to change. I would like to be able to if I had some money, I would love to be able to buy places.
Well, St. Maisie's soon to be at a major motion picture studio.
Yeah,
near you.
About that. But, I don't know. It's like that's the dream that I have is to
hasn't been picking up on the Middlesteins now. You're such a hot property. I mean, that seems to me like one of these sprawling Netflix shows.
You know what? I really appreciate your enthusiasm, and I wish that you ran the world.
that's a sentiment we definitely need to hear more often. I love the Middlesteins, and for a lot of one I relate because I'm Jewy and I come from this dysfunctional background and I grew up in the 70s. But one of the subtext of the Middlesteins I like is secret behavior.
Yeah.
Yes. And you talk about, eating is a secret behavior. Drinking could be a secret behavior. And they're both secret only up to a point.
I have so many secret behaviors.
Tell us.
I can't tell you any because then there wouldn't be secrets anymore. No, it's just about me and my air conditioner, and that's it. That's all you need to know.
When do you find out what that button on the right does?
Well, yeah. I think that especially if you live by yourself, but even if you don't live by yourself, like it's almost like it is a little sexualized if you live with somebody and then you get to have that secret behavior.
The air conditioner?
Even if it's just like food or a sleeping pill or whatever it is.
I think I sexualize all of it, sleeping pills and food, which are things I both embrace.
Yeah. And why? Because it's your own, right? Like it's like an intimate gesture.
It is an intimate gesture. It's a gift to myself. It's pleasure. Mm-hmm. I love taking Ambien because it knocks me the fuck out, and there's a real gift to that. Mm-hmm. To being, that's something that's given me the gift of turning the switch off.
My friend just brought me Ambien from China.
Oh, Chinese Ambien?
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell me. Will you crush it up and snort it?
I don't know. I haven't done it. I just had like half of one. I was like, what do I do? And he was like, just only take half. And so I've only taken half, but it really does. It's really delightful and it works and it's perfect. But,
yeah, but
I was like, you're a real friend. Real friends bring you Ambien from foreign countries.
Okay. You also tweeted, okay, here's this for a segue, that real friends don't have babies.
Well, okay. I love her. I'm like,
it's over. You're never going to see her again.
I know. One of my best friends. No, I love her so much. But she doesn't know yet. That's the thing. She doesn't know at all. But I know because I've lived through many friends having babies. That, you know, it's, you lose them for months and months at a time. Like, the first, you have a baby and then you're just gone for 6 months.
I think 18 years is the current figure.
Well, I think there's at least 6 months period, a 6 month to a year period where people have babies. And it's fine. You had a baby. So go and do what you need to do. But no one going in knows that that's what happens. But I've cycled through it so many times where people can't, they always cancel. They're always canceling plans because they can't figure out how to breastfeed or whatever it is.
Don't you cancel plans because I have to write? Isn't like writing
no,
like the great?
Now
like,
I do. Yeah. Now I'm like, oh,
Larry David the shit out of that. Are you kidding? It's like, I have a deadline. Okay, Mike, we understand. I can't come see your stupid band. It's okay. I have to write. I have a deadline.
It's true. But that's like more on a weekly basis. Whereas like this is like, I haven't seen you in 3 months. And it's like we're really moving up, we're working up to the baby thing. But I also like appreciate it because somebody needs to populate the world and it's not going to be me. And and they're all great people and they're great parents. So, and I have a niece that I love and so I have a child in my life that's really wonderful. So
did I read correctly? Because you're off Facebook for a little while, taking a little break. Mm. Understandable. You got to unplug. I mean, you just have to. You go fucking nuts. But did I read correctly right before you pulled the plug that you were having a little quandary? You were wondering about tell me if I'm wrong.
You weren't planning
on getting married, and you don't have any kids, and yeah. You were wondering whether to spend your to squander your advance or to squirrel it away for a rainy day.
I got a really tiny foreign royalty check, and I was like, can I just like buy it, go on vacation?
I got the answer for you. Spend it.
I bought an air conditioner. Okay, so there was like a huge conversation about whether or not I should spend it or save it.
It's no conversation. Spend it.
Yeah, and so I did spend it, but I just didn't go spend it on vacation. I spent it on.
You spend that and a whole lot more.
I got my bike fixed. I got a new air conditioner. I will tell you this. Only because you asked, I will tell you this, when things happen and money comes in because of Maisie the book, then there are charitable donations that get made in her name. So if anybody would like to donate something in her honor, there's wonderful organizations in here. I don't know how far a reach this has, but
we reach
wonderful.
And with your massive Twitter feed, we'll reach even more people.
There's just wonderful organizations in your community that like help the homeless, or there you can just donate directly to like hunger organizations where they all will distribute meals, things like that. So it's. I would not have a book, and I would not have any. Nobody would even care
about
me.
You know what? I believe
right
in
now.
It. So if I were to, if I wanted to write a check right now, where would I send it? What would I do?
Well, I don't. It's so. I don't want to do that because it's so intimate to like to different like communities. Because
this isn't the Jerry Lewis telethon.
Yeah. But I just think it's not that hard.
Edison. You're no Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, it's not that hard. It's not that hard to find. But there's definitely like great hunger organizations in every community.
I think that's righteous. Yeah. I think we need to have like a positive spin, on everything we do. And I love that, we're talking about this before and we're running out of time. It is the fastest half hour on the internet. But I did want to touch on, you consider yourself an open source writer.
Oh, yeah. So I do post a lot about the process of writing, and I've done it for years because I think it's been really beneficial for me to read about other people's experiences in it. Constantly finding things. Even just somebody tweeted about this Ann Patchett article from The Atlantic from 2008 about how she was just on book tour for ever and ever and ever. And I was like, I think I need to read this right now in this moment in my life. I've found that people, especially like younger people who are writing or trying to start a career, have appreciated me talking about my experiences. Where maybe it started as just like a venting place and has become something a little bit more structured and helpful to me and I'm a teacher also to organize my thoughts. So I think it's a good idea. I love the idea of open source and I've been a blogger since 1998. So I've always loved the idea of the internet being, information wanting to be free and the internet just making all these feelings and ideas accessible to people. So I'm hoping people get something out of me
I think it's
talking very, as much as I do about my writing.
I think they are, and they do, and I think you have to. And those of us who are fortunate enough, I mean, really, truly fortunate to ever have the opportunity to publish a book.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a meritocracy. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there are a lot of great writers out there who aren't just going to, you know, get the nod for whatever reason. The internet hopefully makes things more democratic, but nothing, you know, can help out a writer as much as, you know, HarperCollins or Simon & Schuster.
Right.
You know, I mean, to really get noticed the first time out and that you're helping people, and I try to do the same. I mean, so many people have been generous with me over the years, giving their time and their expertise. I mean, since I was a teenager in the magazine business, just sort of sorting me out on any possible level. And then there were the people who were real dicks, you know, too.
Yeah.
And I'd never want to be that person. If anybody ever asks me, oh, Mike, you know, what's your advice? And if sometimes I just need to be read the facts, you know,
yeah,
the facts of life about what it really takes to be a writer, I think you got to be there. I think it's part of the trip. And if you and frankly, I'm going to be harsh. I think if you don't, and if you don't consider this a privilege and what we get to do, then I think you need to get the fuck out of the business.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the only flip side to that, agree with you, is that we're like inherently antisocial people.
So do you think you have to be selfish to be a writer?
No, I don't feel selfish about it, but I just feel like we're like new, huge nerds. Like we just want to.
Well, we spend a lot of time alone.
There's like a side of us that like really, that's why you have to have the secret pleasures, right? Like whatever
right,
that might be for you. But not everyone has like is able to go out and talk to people or get something out of it. I have many writer friends who would not want to go. Like I'm psyched that I get to go tour for 6 weeks this fall because I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to see things and I get to see other writers. Like I'm going to do 8 literary festivals this fall.
Awesome.
So there's no way I'm not going to see like awesome people that I like or meet new people that I like.
Do you get a lot of groupies?
No, nobody gives a shit about me. I'm a middle-aged Jewish lady. Nobody
cares. What are you talking about? You tell me you don't get a lot of like literary groupies.
Nobody cares.
Come on.
Trust me. Nobody
cares.
Come on.
Like, like nerdy but menschy Jewish dudes.
No. I have like one, like maybe one every once in a while I have one. But like
I find that hard to believe.
It's very, very rare.
Okay. Last question because it has been the fastest half hour, you know, on the internet today.
There's still, she's talking, by the way.
No. He's out of the doghouse.
Yeah.
No, they're going home for apology sex. There's no question about it. Okay. Last question of the day. It's the classic arts and seizure question we ask everybody.
Oh.
Have you ever smoked angel dust?
I have done so many drugs, but that I have not done.
Well, you're still young. Okay, so Saint Maisie and Saint Elizabeth and the Booth and everybody in the Heritage Radio Network, Jamie, thank you so much for coming down. Where are you going to be next in New York, or where can people come and find you?
Oh, tomorrow I'm reading at the Brooklyn Bridge Park. I'm doing like it's like the most amazing reading series. It's on the water in Brooklyn Bridge Park.
I'm going to ride my bike
It's 7 o'clock at night. I hope it doesn't rain, but that's like my dream.
Okay, I'm gonna come down and check you out and check out all your groupies.
Two.
How's the pizza?
So good.
All right. There's one more coming.
Thanks, Roberta's.
We got one more. So, yes, thanks to everybody at Roberta's, our sponsor, and one more time for the Heritage Radio Network, everybody in Radio Land Arts and Seizures. We're kind of taking it slow this summer. We'll see what happens. Big new season coming in September. I'm promising more wrestlers and writers, and I actually think I have like some genuine criminals coming this year. Not these low-level delinquents that have kind of been our bread and butter so far.
But I'm high-level delinquent.
Have you ever been arrested?
I did not get arrested, but I got ticketed for vandalism once.
Ah, vandalism. Well, tagging the school?
I was stickering for one of my books down in the Lower East Side, and I had to go to court for it. So, yeah, I feel all right. I feel punk rock. I'm all right.
All right, that's righteous.
Yeah.
All right, Jamie Attenberg, please go out and buy St. Maisie. It's awesome. And write to Netflix. Tell them that you want to see the Middlesteins, because Orange is the New Jew or some goddamn thing. We'll see you next week on Arts and Seizures. Yeah!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money.
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos.
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.